Twin Creeks, too, with a $260,000 Constitution Colt. I think there were, I had it, actually, I took a screenshot. It looked to me like there were about 20 or so yearlings over 100,000 for day one. So very nice numbers. And we'll talk more about the sale with Sid. Should mention the $130,000 auction price. Forgot to bring this up with Tony Lacey on Monday, but at the end of bidding yesterday, the Gunrunner season that was offered by Ron Winchell and the Torre Alba family, and it's a no guarantee season, but $130,000, and this was money that was going to be donated toward the Western Kentucky relief funds. So what a nice gesture. The money, if you haven't followed this, the money that poured out of racing interests toward Mayfield and everybody and anywhere that has needed the help and to get, make Christmas as pleasant as possible for those that lost everything. Just tremendous. So $130,000. In fact, Doug Cawthon is quoted. He noted the $50,000 from Kentucky Downs and $50,000 from Three Chimneys, but all the farms gave, big money. I mean, they're really a, when it comes to this kind of situation, barn fires and, other, tragic situations, health issues, injuries, nobody answers the call like the racing community, say the least. All right. So we'll save this, more of this for Sid. There's a lot of news, actually. Dick Powell will join us in about 10 minutes, and we'll keep an eye on what's going on at Hong Kong. But let me give you the itinerary, Dick, and then Sid, top of hour two. Nick Tamaro is going to join us. We'll get a recap of the first few days at Sam Houston, and we'll look ahead to this week. Racing resumes tomorrow, and Thursday and Friday, but I think Saturday's drawn as well. And in hour three, as promised, I forgot to mention this yesterday. I noted it the other day, but Clint Bentley is going to visit the director and co-writer of Jockey, and really looking forward to it. Given we've had references already a couple of different days last week, and then with Mig on Monday, and looking forward to having Clint talk about his background, his dad rode and trained, and he grew up around racetracks, and you can tell, as we said with Mig the other day, you can just tell how much affection for the lifestyle and for the way the racetrack runs and the life around it and what it looks like and feels like, and it is really conveyed in the film. So Jockey's director and co-writer wrote the screenplay with his collaborator Greg Quidar And in fact, they, in you know, finding out about Clint Bentley and Greg Quidart, they worked together on a previous film called Transpicos, which I've not watched yet, but I'm looking forward to watching it. And it's a border guard story. And you know, watching the trailer for it, it's from 2016, and it has all the themes of any border film. The one that it'll make you think of just watching the trailer certainly is the Harvey Keitel, Jack Nicholson, and I want to say Valerie Perrine film entitled simply The Border. If you haven't seen that, I would recommend that. That's got to go back to, wow, that's got to go back to early 80s, late 70s. So I'm sure I will work in a question about the border with and Transpicos too with Clint Bentley. Really looking forward to it. And with the movie about to get a wider release, I mean, I watched it on the small, you know, on a small screen. I can't imagine how beautiful it looks on the big screen. So it's coming to a theater near you. Hopefully you're willing to go to a theater near you, given round two, three, or four, however you want to characterize this situation that just is very tough. So Clinton Bentley today. And I don't know how long Clint's visit is going to go. If there's room, Seth Merrow. And of course, Seth has got cinematic chops. He's got his nephew who is active in Hollywood and has got credits. And so Seth's always, he's always open to cinema talk. All right, some more news and such. Because you can't go, 24 hours without a dozen things happening that require attention. And this is good news. This is very encouraging. If you didn't see this yesterday, the Gaming Commission, and you'll recall, of course, that the cause célèbre of Trevor McCarthy and Katie Davis, before Katie got in full and delivered an adorable baby girl, Riley. McCarthy and Katie were victimized more or less by an absolutely ridiculous, arcane entry rule that married couples had to be in New York, had to be co-joined as an entry. So there was attempts made through the legislature to address this, which was a little silly. And to the governor's credit, she wouldn't sign it, and she basically said this is not something for the legislature to worry about, and she kicked it back to the Gaming Commission. So this is why we have, you know, this is why we have things like the New York Gaming Commission. You guys handle it. And so this hearing yesterday was essentially, you know, crafted to clear up that situation, and everybody agrees that, you know, that rule's got to go. But what happened was, and I'll bring this up with Dick. In fact, Casey, reach for Dick, because I want his comments, because he's certainly experienced on this, and his friend and and everybody's friend, Bennett Liebman, spoke yesterday at the hearing. It evolved into a next level discussion where essentially the commission was urged to just eliminate entries entirely. And so that's what we're looking at. And it closed out yesterday, essentially, with Robert Williams, who's the ED of the NYGC, they'll come back with recommendation, after further deliberation, etc. But there's a real chance that all entries, right now, of course, in stakes, $50,000 or more purse, are individual entries. And so, if there's common ownership, etc. So this would be a nice development. And in fact, Jeff Canizzo, who we talked to the other day, Jeff said that the analysis by NYRA, this is quite something. They estimate that last year, if there had been no, if there was no rule regarding entries, it would have resulted in an extra $25 million in handle. Which is obviously, substantial. So, very nice development. And frankly, if that's what happens, if that's the legacy of the married jockey controversy, then it'll be a great legacy. Everybody will appreciate. Everybody appreciates the efforts going into getting Laurel up and running, and they're inching very close. In fact, I talked to Callie Francoise this morning, and she's out there exercise riding. She says the track is getting there. And yesterday, in a meeting with the horsemen, Mike Rogers and the MJC team is asking and surveying everybody about getting started, restarted on Sunday, and then adding days even into February to make up for these lost cards. And Glenn Kozak, who has come down, and of course Glenn, before he came to New York, was at Maryland, and certainly knows particularly the issues of Laurel. Laurel, it's been well documented. Laurel has had drainage issues historically. This is not a huge shock, but it was hoped that when they renovated the track last year, that it some of that was going to be behind them for good. And then the ice falls that were forming, essentially, it's a question of adding what Kozak identified as concrete sand to the composition of the cushion. And so they're doing that, they're taking up sections and incorporating, and then they lay it back down, and then they groom it. So they're very close, and everybody's hopeful that this is going to be behind them as soon as Sunday. But it's been, as you heard from Mike Trombetta, Trombetta was very polite. Ferris Allen quoted in Matt Hegarty's piece in the Forum yesterday. Ferris was also polite, but you could tell they're a little at wit's end, no doubt. So I wanted to get those two in and those two pieces of news. And I think Dick Powell is standing by.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of what's in, here's
Dick, that's a fair conclusion, right? If the Trevor McCarthy, Katie Davis legacy from that silly rule from the 40s, if the legacy is that it results in the end of coupled entries in New York, then the whole incident was worthwhile.
Yes, and it's fine with me. I know there's a comment period. I got something from the Gaming Commission, and I don't remember the deadline for the comment period, but I did want to send something to them advocating two things. Number one, uncouple everything. No horse in any race should be coupled. But number two, you need to have a rule in my mind that every horse has to be ridden to its best advantage. Some countries have this, some countries do not. The countries that do not have it have uncoupled horses, like, for instance, Aidan O'Brien in Ireland. He'll have four or five in a race, and some of them are just sacrificial lambs, and yet they're being bet individually. Well, I don't like that. And some countries like Australia, where Aidan O'Brien got into a lot of trouble one year when I was at the Melbourne Cup, where horses were in to be not just pace setters, but to take up certain positions on the track for the favorite. And they have the rule that every horse has to be ridden to its best advantage. So if you add that second wrinkle, then you take away the prospect of having horses that are in a race that are uncoupled and still doing the work of somebody else.
No, nobody would argue that. Of course, the flip side of that, Dick, is that you have to have a group of stewards that are then interested enough in the way races are ridden, you know, to react appropriately if any of that could be called into question at any point.
Yes, and the riders have to be educated and then warned that you have to ride your horse to its best possible advantage. So if you have a 6-furlong horse in a mile and a half race, well, your best advantage is to get the mile and a half, not to get the 6 furlongs. And there's going to be some chaos in that. I understand it. But I like the countries that have the second wrinkle to it. I don't like the countries that allow a trainer to just load up in a race. Many times running in different silks. Now, yes, you can figure out it's Aidan O'Brien. You know, he's listed as the trainer. Duh. But still, it's also, go back to Franco's last race. And he won his 14th race, and it was great. But there was an ugly part to that race. And it was, he had a rabbit. The rabbit got left at the gate. So now Franco's like out there. Tom Quealy's like looking around, where's my rabbit? And then Cirrus de Zegles, who's a terrific horse.
Sure.
And was a gelding that wasn't allowed to run in the arc and a lot of the big races over there. Cirrus de Zegles is on the lead, and here comes Frankel's rabbit rushing up, not only to push the pace, but basically to harass Cirrus de Zegles. And I did not like that. I could have seen a scenario where if he would have bumped into the horse, you take Frankel down. that's like, all right, Dick, go ahead, cause a riot. But so there, it wasn't just a pacemaker.
Right.
The horse was in there to harass the other horse. We saw it once years ago, one of the fall stake races going a mile. I don't know if it was a Woodward or not. There was some craziness with rabbits and getting in the way of other horses and stuff like that. So that's where the jock who's on, let's say, the rabbit pacemaker gets called in and has some really serious questions to answer. You know, what were you doing out there, and with penalties? So, yes, you do need the races to be correctly adjudicated. But I've never been on the group that wants horses coupled. The rest of the world doesn't, and the rest of the world, you know. you and I talk constantly, and, you know, we shouldn't compare ourselves to the rest of the world. And usually it's a medication issue and stuff like that. But there are issues where the rest of the world does something, and the proof that it works is look at their per capita betting compared to our per capita betting. I mean, we did $12 billion last year, and highest since, I think, 2009. That's fantastic, but we have 340 million people living here. $12 billion is not that good when you look at Australia with 20-something million people betting way more than we bet. So these things do work, and they don't have the issues that some of our experts feel that they would have by not coupling horses. So yes, if it happens for a different reason, you know, Katie and Trevor, fine with me. But if I will write a comment to them, the suggestion doing that.
I think we at the time, you know, I know some people were were irked by the governor, you know, how she handled it, but it feels like when you see this outcome and this, you know, in this next step, the point she made was well taken, that the legislature shouldn't be making up rules. I think she even said this would be a bad precedent. That's what we have a gaming commission for.
Yes. And me, Dick Powell personally, Rob Williams does a fantastic job with the gaming commission. I mean, Rob is doing, wow. I mean, when you consider the gaming commission today, horse racing, casinos, VLT operations, now sports betting, now mobile sports betting. That's a lot for any agency to be handling. And then Rob's been the executive director there for gotta be going on 20 years.
Yeah, and it does, at least I can say that it feels like there's less of a contentious relationship between the commission and particularly with Naira than there was at other times. There were moments, particularly when you think about what they did when Barry Schwartz was working hard to lower takeout and was whittling takeout down on a steady basis, and the, at that time, the Racing and Wagering Board came in and wiped out, you know, 3 years of progress on lowering takeout, wiped it out in a fell swoop. That's not what a gaming commission is supposed to be doing. That's one of my memories of you know, the way they operated.
Yes, and I could also say that they were slow to act when a certain president of Naira was charging a higher takeout than he should have been, and they should have been on top of that way quicker with severe penalties. They're charging the public a higher takeout rate than you're supposed to charge them. That's kind of mortal sin territory.
Well, I think if you want to talk, if you want to discuss that and flesh that out, but I will say that sunset clause, that the confusion over that sunset clause was easily understood, and I would not. I mean, I certainly never held that against Charlie the way some people seem to want to hold it against him. And to, right now, I've got something else to hold against Charlie, but not that. Because Dick, all of us. I mean, I've discussed this with Matt Hegarty. None of us that were even close to, you know, the game that way. None of us remembered. It was the guy in Jersey, right? It was the horse player in Jersey that said, you know, that was a conditional That was a conditional increase that sunset after 2 years. And it, the misunderstanding about thinking that, well, we have to ask, you know, to lower it. I understand why that happened the way it happened. You don't agree?
And a lot of people, a lot of money, not just him. Someone who's now has resurfaced in the HISA was involved in that in a financial role.
Speaking of which,
I have a memory. I call it Irish Alzheimer's. I can't remember who I hold it against.
That's funny. So
they're just things that I can remember, and there's a couple people out there that appears in mind that have similar memories, so that I can always call up and say, "Hey, when this happened? Blah, 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 blah. Oh yeah," and then you know, like we have a real time memory of what happened 20, 30 years ago. So yes.
Since this came up, we should mention Lisa Lazarus, who was named yesterday. I had said last week that the word had, you know, kind of come out. In fact, I think Alan Foreman even had tipped the hand that HISA was very close to naming a CEO. And the individual they came up with, frankly, is, you know, got a tremendous resume toward this kind of assignment, Lisa Lazarus. And I think that anybody that wondered about how independent HISA might be got a real indication with her being hired. Because she frankly was not who, you know, certain people had advocated for. Let's put it that way. So it sure feels like Charlie Schiller is going his own way, and this group is going to operate as independently as they can. And this, frankly, may be. This may be like I wasn't a huge Game of Thrones fans, but HISA kind of feels like one of the dragons that you know, Khaleesi is a dragon that is not going to be so tameable. So, a very interesting piece of news yesterday with Lazarus coming aboard.
Well, I will see your Game of Thrones and mention I have never seen Game of Thrones. So I hear people make references to it all the time.
Yeah,
I've never seen it.
I understand the pop. I got the Patina liked it, and so I, you know, there were many a Sunday night I had to sit there and watch it.
It's not even a matter of liking and not liking. I just never watched it. Now, I will go up against anybody on The Wire trivia.
Oh, look at you!
Anybody?
Wow! Oh, wow! I like it. I like it.
What, you know what? All right. What's Omar's last name? Little. What's Snoop's last name?
I've seen it, but I'm not. I was a huge Homicide: Life on the Street fan, but I can't. I could probably do better with Homicide than I can with The Wire.
Yeah, so it's Pierce, you know, she was Snoop Pearson, Bunk Rowland. Yeah, I can't watch enough and watched it when it came out and watched it constantly and still watch it and.
It's very good.
Some of the other things, I just don't have time. I actually watched a movie. Now, for me to watch a movie is like earth shatter. And someone was bugging me about Don't Look Up. And
yeah.
I didn't even know what it was about. So I just knew
interesting.
Who was in it. I watched it, enjoyed it. Very entertaining, enjoyed it, everything else. Now, I'm on Netflix. I find the movie See the Ball, Pass the Ball. I watched that.
Hmm.
It's about Barcelona when Pep Guardiola coached.
Oh, wow.
The glory days of Champions League and crushing Manchester United and all the guys who have come up through the academy and Pep, playing this pure form of football, which I know really annoys other people. But if you're a Barcelona fan, like, the only way to play. And now we got Xavi back as our coach, and hopefully the idiots who run the franchise will straighten up. But it was I enjoyed that. So one movie led me to watch seek out another movie. So now I've watched two movies. Look at me.
Well, since we went off in this direction, and it is kind of a movie, it is kind of Movie Wednesday here, because we're going to have Clint Bentley, who wrote and directed, co-wrote and directed Jockey. But I, in very short order since Sunday, have watched these first 9 hours of Station 11. And it's not going to be for everybody. And particularly if lockdown pandemic fever got to people, if people were the claustrophobic, if that's caused anxiety and depression, frankly, in you, it's not something you're going to want to watch. But I texted Dave Hill because I saw that on Twitter. David Hill was. He's been taken by it as well. There's one more episode, but 9 episodes out on HBO Max. It Station 11 from the Canadian author. I guess it's about 10 years old, the book, and I was unfamiliar with it, but it's unbelievable, just terrific.
Now, how can I watch Jockey? How do I?
You're going to have to wait until it'll show up at is it Spectrum? What's the little theater in on Delaware Avenue there in Albany, the art house? That's the Spectrum, right?
I might as well go to Greenwich Village, Delaware Albany, that's Delaware Avenue. Okay.
All right. So, in other words, you're not a happy two of Albany. I'm pretty sure it's Tina and I. We've probably gone down there 7-8 times over the years. There's the terrific Italian deli market joint that is now part of Roma. Roma bought them, but yet it seems like their name is, and I'm going to forget, starts with a C, there's actually two really good Italian markets on either side of the Spectrum down in Albany. So that's where you'll probably see it. I suppose Saratoga, an effort might be made, Dick, to get it into the big theater, downtown, Bow Tie.
That'd be nice.
That would make a lot of sense.
It's not a Netflix or Amazon or...
No, not yet. Not yet. Yes. Cardona's. Leslie Knopf is like, she's like a Wikipedia with feet. It's unbelievable. Thank you, Leslie. Cardona is right. That's funny. In fact, it's come out of the woodwork. I'm now getting Facebook messages, texts, and tweets. John Panetta, John, you were close. Cordoba's might be a spell correct. Cardona's Market is the name, and what they've done is Roma now has their prepared meals. They do these meatballs and chicken meatballs that they've got a grab and go refrigerated case before you get in line for your sub at Roma. And it's a big convenience because they got lasagna. They do a nice lasagna, eggplant parm, and more. So very interesting development. For those of you, when you come back to Saratoga this summer and you go to Roma, you're going to see this expanded scenario. And they're all wearing Cardona's gear too, hats and t-shirts.
All right, well, they're on the track.
Let's go. What do you got?
Towards the gate, maybe 5 minutes of post time.
All right.
Race 9 is class 3, 16-80 rating.
Happy Valley, everybody. Happy Valley.
Meters,
Happy Valley.
Which is a two-turn mile. So we have the favorite, and no favorites have won tonight. 9-1, 11-1, 28-1, 15-9, 25, 5-4. No favorites have won yet. Now, Joe Marrero has number 6, Gallant Crown, for Tony Millard. Tony Millard has had a winner tonight. Draws post 4, which is perfect going 2 turns. Has tactical speed, so if Joe wants to get this one placed up early with 123 pounds, I think he's going to be the horse to beat and will probably get a good trip from there. The horses to beat, other than the favorite, are the inside, not the inside. The 1 and the 2. One is Cheerful Days, Zach Purton. Zach is back riding, passed his test and rode trials the other day. He has not had a winner tonight. I thought he had a chance last race, but he got shut off in the stretch. He's on number 1, Cheerful Days, carrying a high weight of 133 pounds, but does have some back class. And number 2, Mount Divis, David Hall and Luke Ferraris. Draws post 2, one-dimensional closer, has to save ground. Not really a Happy Valley horse lately, but does have some back class at Happy Valley. So we'll see if he can get uncorked late with Luke Ferrar. So those two will be flying, and I think the favorite, Gallant Crown, will be up near the pace. Now, speed has not been doing well. In fact, the times have been notoriously slow, and that's been true of both Shot 10 and Happy Valley. I think when we get into the wintertime, we've had good turf. We haven't had good to firm in quite a while. So the times have been a little bit off. Speed hasn't been dominating the way some nights in Hong Kong it can. But I think with Joe's cleverness, he can get the 6 on or near the pace, save ground around the 2 turns, let all the other horses jam up going into the first turn, and work out a trip. So I'm going to go with the 6 here, straight exactly. 6/1/2 and race number 9 at Happy Valley.
Well, and I'm just looking at form to win, and there form to win's got complete agreement, Dick, with Cheerful Days, the 1 and the 6, Gallant Crown. And you know, what are you going to do? It's kind of logical. Let me also add a filter here to, in terms of the distance, and see if that if there's any further hint, maybe of a price that might jump into the picture here. But on form to win, it's pretty form full at first glance. And
the race does look form full, Steve. And the 9, 10, 11 all drew a bad post, so they're kind of taken out of the race. The 8 drew well with Matthew Poon and does have speed. So the 8 could also be up mid and hang around. But yeah, it's a race just going in. It just looks formful. And formful is not synonymous with Happy Valley, but if it's formful, it's formful.
Yeah, exactly. You look at it, and you know, not every race has to, you know, you don't have to twist yourself into a pretzel to beat every single favorite. In terms of price, though, you mentioned World Famous. I just made the adjustment on form to win, and for the distance, as opposed to just the overall form. And World Famous, the 8 that you just mentioned with Matthew Poon, does jump into the picture. And World Famous is 10-1. And actually, if you're looking to add another horse, you know, to try to get somebody into, you know, the try or potentially the exact underneath one of the, you know, logicals, the one and the six. Maldives, the two with Luke Ferraris, who is 6-1 right now. So the one and six are the very logical, and maybe the two and the eight as some exotic booster candidates.
Well, and a couple of the commentators have Red Majesty, the 11 on top, and Jenny Paddock Picks has the 11 on top, David Hayes. And a horse, Karis Teton's going to have to use that pace from post nine, but probably looks quick enough to not get hung out. And then it's a matter of is he good enough? He gets in light. He had been running against class four. Now he moves up to class three, his last start, and he ran well doing that. So he showed he can handle class three. So they like the 11, and the 11 was 20-1. I don't know what he is now, but and David Hayes having a very, very good meet. He's fourth in the trainer's table. Frankie Law's already had a winner tonight, so Frankie's still killing it. John Size has a winner tonight. The jocks, you know, Zach's injury took him out for about 5 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, so he's back. I know they put him through a rigorous testing before they're going to allow him to ride, which I like to see. I think too many times in American racing, jock gets hurt and gets a note from a doctor and it's back riding. That, you know, the club here really puts them through the ringer. And then he had to ride in the trials to prove that he was fit and sound and everything else. So Zach is back, but he now trails Joe by 9. And that'll go down to the wire. That'll tighten up. But the other riders at this meet, Steve, they just haven't done well. Vincent Hull, Karis Deaton, Alexi Bedell, I mean, they're all good riders, but their percentages are just way down. The trainers, it's a different story. The leading trainers are doing great, but there's a good 10, 15 trainers having good, solid seasons. So the jocks is too top-heavy. The trainers, at least, the success has been spread out pretty good.
Couple of quick notes, Dick, and you mentioned jockeys. I should slip in one of the other pieces of news from yesterday. Rad Ortiz, I'm not going to invoke, you know, karma-esque into the equation. He's going to be out a month after that gate incident with the knee, and he's got a little hairline fracture, so he's going to have to sit out. So for those that were looking for maybe a 60-day vacation after the incident in New York, it's manifested itself through natural occurrences. The card, it's, you know, it's funny, as opposed to last Wednesday, Dick, when we were together watching this stuff, it was all chalk. This has been a pricey day. $18 winner, yeah. 23, 57, 31, 19, and then another $50 winner in the sixth, Super Dobbin. So today has been, you know, a little bit more happy at Happy Valley. We're just about ready here. Let me get ready as they fill out the gate.
So he gets to push the button out, and they're racing. Pretty good line away from the start. Smoothies had nobody ready here. World famous was quickly away. Last one, Red Majesty for Karis Teton is going forward. And he also is Gallant Crown from Smiling Time, who's called three out of the winning post the first time.
Romantic Combo is a little bit slow away from Barrier 12. It looks to be going back. Fast Pace, one of the first away, but out wide of the anomalies, charging forward. And World Famous, he likes to go forward. He's up handy also. Savvy Ken is not at the end of the lead, but he's up at the first floor, followed by Wealthy Delight, Sankon Sank, and then came Flying Turbo, two lengths to Champion Dragon at the winning post, and he's just throwing the head up into the air. Vinci on the rail, followed by Tianchi Monster, Gift of Lifeline, and four lengths away to the last one, who was Romantic Combo. 13.22 as they run past the 1,200 metres, and in the second section, ticked over in 22.58, so genuine pace, and it is the anomaly in front, showing the way by a length on World Famous, and Fast Pace handed up for a trail third. Fourth is Savvy Kingman. A length and a half away, Sank on Sank, followed by Wealthy Delight. Vinci's midfield on the rail from Flying Turbo. 2 lengths to a Champion Dragon, who's took up the head skywards and won't really relax and drop it. Tianchi Monster back on the inside. Gift of Lifeline, a Romantic Combo, just been shoved along last. Inside the 700 metres. It is in front, the Anomaly, showing out by 3/4, World Famous. 2 lengths away, third, as Fast Pace as they run off the back straight. Savvy Kingman pushed up. Sank on Sank going okay on the rail. Wealthy Delight called upon, going nowhere in a hurry. Vinci under a ride. Tianchi Monster getting into the clear. Champion Dragon, the favourite, is no good thing from a long way back. He's got a lot to find on the Anomaly, approaching the 250, who leads the way. Fast Pace, World Famous, Sank on Sank up the inside. Savvy Kingman, Tianchi Monster out wider. It's Sank on Sank in front from Tianchi Monster, who's trying to challenge, but he travelled oh so well on the turn. And Sank on Sank has beaten Tianchi Monster and Savvy Kingman. Fourth, maybe Romantic Combo. He's whizzed up the rail to a run into about fourth position, maybe. He wasn't too far away with the...
Well, that that was my fault, Dick, was it not? Something...
Got me a little confused.
What happened was the video... I had both... RTN and Naira Betts up, and there were two audios, and I think I muted the wrong audio. So we got a race call. But what was funny was it coincided literally with the running from Happy Valley. Now hold on here. Let me see if I can this straightened out.
Canto prepared three out, and then came Perfect Mary Knoll.
Nearly 5 minutes
at the end of the field. 1,200 metres left to go. 29.19. So they don't want to get home here in a hurry in this final race. The leader is Red Majesty. Shows out by three.
I guess. Hold on, Dick. Let me see. Why is this...
Back on the inside is Smoothies, followed by Cheerful Days. Two to Nearly Finers,
yes,
the run past the 750. And back last of all is Perfect Mary Knoll. It is Sir Red Majesty in front, being well rated here. Teton shows out half a length on Smiling Time. World Famous third as they peel off the back. Then came Gallant Crown, followed by Encanto Prepared, who's had a tough run. Back on the inside, Maldives from Presence. Following Encanto Prepared into the races, Cheerful Days, Smoothies, Nearly Finer, and Perfect Mary Knoll. Red Majesty's had every opportunity in front. He's looking to capitalise, coming to the 200 metres. World Famous there to strike, as too is Gallant Crown, who's taken over. And look at Cheerful Days with the big weight down the outside. Maldives through between runners. It's Purton and Marrera. Purton's getting the upper hand. He's back with a W next to the name of Zach. And
well,
he is indeed.
There it is. And Dick, we couldn't have laid this out any better, right? 6-1, and then Maldives, that two that I've suggested, ends up third. And it, frankly, World Famous just faded a little bit late. I think it lost the photo for fourth. Otherwise, ended up 1-6-2-11-8. So we really could not have doped that out any better.
It was all the logical horses. I liked 6-1-2. It came in 1-6-2. Zach Purton gets a win, as the track announcer was mentioning at the wire. So Zach gets it's his first win, and since the beginning of December, Joe finishes second. The exact to come back. Not bad. Divide 208 by 5, you get $42, like the forecast.
What about the, they took it off the screen. 4-1, over 3-2, over 7-1. So not bad at all. Not bad. Good job, Dick.
Well, that's it. The race just spoke to logic. So, on an illogical night, and looking at the whole meet, Steve, we have an average field size of 12.04 with Happy Valley and Shottown, which is just the envy of just about everyone. The average win price is $18. Now, you would think that would be, ooh, that's pretty high, a little chaotic. But 31% of the favorites have won going into tonight. Now, tonight we've had 1 out of 9, so that'll drop slightly. But favorites are winning at the proper rate. And, in fact, that might be even a little higher than par because with 12-horse fields, you know, favorites winning 31% is not bad. So what you get every year at Hong Kong is field size. You get, if you hit a winner, you're gonna be happy. Average win price, $18. But you can hit a winner because the favorites are winning 31%. So if you're just playing form, if you're that type player, there's still opportunities for you. And the favorites pay really well. So, you get your... the other day, I was doing my charts, and there was a horse who paid, I think, $11 as the favorite. So you don't see that very often. So, very formful finish to tonight's racing at Happy Valley. We go to Sha Tin Saturday night at midnight, 9 p.m. Saturday night Pacific Coast time. 10 race cards, 7 turf, 3 on the all weather. Feature race is going to be a class 2, and I'm really looking forward to this because one of the fastest horses in Hong Kong, I mean just pure speed, is California Spangle. And he's in this class 2. He's still rated in the 90s, so doesn't have to move up to the big boys yet. But he's kind of worked his way up from last year as a Griffin and then moving up through the ladder this year. He is just stupid fast. The gate opens him. He's just smoking. So he's in a 1,200-meter race against Fantastic Way. Good luck, friend. Trillion win. I mean, it's a really good field of 12 going 6 furlongs Saturday night. The race will be drawn tomorrow, so we'll know what number race it's going to be. But that's going to be a real stick out. There's only one class 2 race on the evening. So that race will be easy to find. It might even be the last race of the night. So really good card coming up. The betting has been very strong internationally. Now, Michelle gets the North American numbers, and I know that's been strong as well. But the total Hong Kong Jockey Club All Sources pool has been very, very high. And that's coming off a good year last year where purses were raised. And once again, business is still sustaining itself. So very, very good news.
Excellent. Dick, I appreciate it. Let me wrap up here because I got a full dance card. And we'll gather next week.
Okay, Steve. Talk to you next week.
Dick Powell, everybody, HKJC Racing, of course, on Twitter and at the website. And hope you're taking part. Tonight, it's funny, because of what's going on here, I did not usually, I watch the early part of the cards as soon as I get up and start working. I did not today because of the the soon-to-be dusty disaster unfolding in this closet and bathroom. Let's take a break, top of the hour, and look to a visit with Sid Fernando, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And they've got a little bit more of a leisurely visit with Sid today. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on at Keeneland. They're just getting underway, day 2 of the 4-day January sale. See what the early impressions were. And we're starting to get first foals, right? Some of the new sires. Have you seen that? I saw Improbable had his first foal yesterday. And there was somebody a little bit less of a big name that seemed to be the first foal that dropped. But they're starting to come. So we'll check in with Sid Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and Hill & Dale certainly prominent yesterday at Keeneland with the top seller and more. Back after this. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states.